Stand up, come to order. Messages from the House.
February the 27th, 2008, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 2, Select Natural Resource Funding Committee Chairmanship, ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 3, Game and Fish Funding, ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. Senate File 17, School Facilities Infrastructure Cost, ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 32, Board of Parole Authorizing Changes in Length of Parole, ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 49, Impact Assistant Payments, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 52, Boards and Commissions Compensation, ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. Senate File 61, School Finance Recapture Payments, ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. Senate File 64, Valid Court Orders, ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 68, Judicial Retirement, ayes 59, excused 1. And Senate File 4, Foreclosure Redemption Period, ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. February the 27th, 2008, from the House of Representatives, message number 206, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 9, State Retirement Board Immunity. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 27th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 98, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Allman, Fecht, Hastert, Langdon, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. Vice President, the consent list today is House Bill 5, Fuel Tax Distribution, House Bill 7, Real Estate Commission Authority, House Bill 14, Nursery Stock, House Bill 16, Special Districts Elections, House Bill 21, Commercial Vehicle Fees, House Bill 25, School Building Plan Review Exception, House Bill 31, Medical Safety Event Reporting, House Bill 45, Film Incentive Program Authorities, House Bill 64, State Auditor Employee Criminal Background Checks, and House Bill 71, Emergency Fire Suppression Account.
The consent list is House Bill 5, Fuel Tax Distributions, House Bill 7, Real Estate Commission Authority, House Bill 14, Nursery Stock, House Bill 16, Special Districts Elections, House Bill 21, Commercial Vehicle Fees, House Bill 25, School Building Plan Review Exception, House Bill 31, Medical Safety Event Reporting, House Bill 45, Film Incentive Program Authority, House Bill 64, State Auditor Employee Criminal Background Checks, House Bill 71, Emergency Fire Suppression Accounts. Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 5, Fuel Tax Distributions, House Bill 7, Real Estate Commission Authority, House Bill 14, Nursery Stock, House Bill 16, Special Districts Elections, House Bill 21, Commercial Vehicle Fees, House Bill 25, School Building Plan Review Exception, House Bill 31, Medical Safety Event Reporting, House Bill 45, Fuel Incentive Program Authority, House Bill 64, State Auditor, Employee Criminal Background Checks, House Bill 71, Emergency Fire Suppression Account. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Vecht?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatron?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. House Bill 5, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 5, 30 ayes. House Bill 7, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 7, 30 ayes. House Bill 14, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 14, 30 ayes. House Bill 16, are there any changes? Closing. Mockler, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 16, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 21, are there any changes? Bebout, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 21, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 25, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 25, 30 ayes. House Bill 31, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 31, 30 ayes. House Bill 45, are there any changes?
Case, aye to no.
Case, aye to no.
Johnson, aye to no.
Townsend, aye to no.
Perkins, aye to no.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 45, 26 ayes, 4 noes. House Bill 64, are there any changes? Hastert, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Mockler, aye to no. Job, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Massey, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 64, 24 ayes, 6 noes. House Bill 71, are there any changes? Bebout, aye to no. Massey, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. DeCaria, aye to no. Mockler, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 71, 24 ayes, 6 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 5, Fuel Tax Distributions, House Bill 7, Real Estate Commission Authority, House Bill 14, Nursery Stock, House Bill 16, Special Districts Elections, House Bill 21, Commercial Vehicle Fees, House Bill 25, School Building Plan Review Exception, House Bill 31, Medical Safety Event Reporting, House Bill 45, Film Incentive Program Authority, House Bill 64, State Auditor Employee Criminal Background Checks, and House Bill 71, Emergency Fire Suppression Account, have passed the Senate. House Bill 59, reading of the Senate, or of the House bill, third reading.
House Bill 59, TANF Amendment, sponsored by Representative Martin, an act relating to the Personal Opportunities with Employment Responsibilities Program, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are some amendments. First reading amendment, the reading clerk will please, the Meyer amendment, the reading clerk will please read in the amendment.
House Bill number 59, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, we passed this act, I think, back in 95, 96. And if I recall, there was over a 90% reduction in the welfare recipients and within the first month after this act became law. And one of the things that, while we are going through that process, this First Amendment alludes to. And at this time, Mr. Vice President, I would ask the reading clerk to read in the amendment.
The amendment
and
has
I would
been
ask the reading
like
clerk
to move
to
the,
move the third reading amendment. Number 1 to House Bill 59. Mr. Vice President,
are you going to move it yourself or are you going to ask the clerk to move it?
I think I'll move myself.
Why don't you do that?
I did that. Oh, it is moved, Mr. Vice President.
Proceed, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, at that time we had some discussion about how come all these welfare people are driving down to the welfare place and picking up their check in a Cadillac. And so we put this restriction in there. And the current law says that a market value of less than $15,000 as a licensed motor vehicle and also provided an aggregate value for both vehicles at $15,000. Well, I think it was wise for the sponsors of this bill to realize that 10 years has gone past and that something should be done, because $15,000 certainly doesn't buy a good vehicle, and you have to get to work. And that's what this program is all about, is getting somebody to work and getting them off welfare. So, Mr. Vice President, realizing that, I increased that to $20,000 for one vehicle and $40,000 for two, and put in a cost of living index, so it will go up based on the Wyoming cost of living index as far as the value of those vehicles, so we won't have to revisit this section. Mr. Vice President, I think this is a reasonable compromise. The original sponsors took the value of the vehicles completely out, and I know at some point in time, within a short time, I'll hear from those constituents about the, if we don't have this, about the person that drove down to the welfare office in their Cadillac and picked up their check. And so, having not heard that for 10 years, I don't want to ever hear it again, and this is a reasonable compromise. There's good enough vehicles in there to, at that level, to get everybody to work, and I would hope for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion, Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. And I guess I'm kind of opposed to the amendment. The vehicle values, you know, was really kind of, I understand why the good senator talked about it and why they were in there. And, you know, and you look at today's markets and what $20,000 is going to buy, and you look at the size of families, and, you know, are some of them going to need a compact car, and is that appropriate? Are they going to need, you know, a full-size vehicle because they're going to have three or four kids, you know, and what type of vehicle? And, you know, $20,000 just doesn't seem, you know, it just, for today's market, just I don't feel that, that it's necessary to put the dollar amount in there, you know. And, you know, with today's market, you know, with $20,000 probably doesn't even buy you a Buick these days. So on and against the amendment.
Senator Case.
About a 2005 LeSabre off the internet for $14,200. It has 13,000 miles. It's a great Buick.
Senator Feck.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Speaking on and against the amendment, I just, honestly, I have to agree that I've purchased three cars in the last year. I wish I could have found one like that. I don't see where this is really adding any value to the proposed changes to TANF, so I would speak against it.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer, final time.
Thank you. The good senator from Cheyenne says, where is the value in this amendment? And let's go directly to that. The value in this amendment is in instructing people, I guess, in making life decisions. You have a life decision. You can buy a $20,000 car or less, and you can put the disposable income in your household to clothe and feed your children and keep your house in good shape. Or you can pay $40,000 for a vehicle, and you won't have money for those life decisions that you have to make. This is helping people in those circumstances where they have a limited amount of money to make good life decisions.
Question is, third reading amendment number one, House Bill 59. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Chair is somewhat in doubt. All those in favor, please stand.
Wow, talk about a bunch of liberals in this Senate.
Jesus Christ, what a bunch of...
All those in opposed, please stand.
Oh, yeah?
Wow.
Okay. That third reading amendment number one has failed. The second reading amendment, Meyer amendment, would you, reading clerk, will please read in that amendment.
Mr. Vice President, I would withdraw the second reading amendment at this time and move to the third reading amendment.
Okay, the second reading amendment has been withdrawn, seeing no objection. So ordered. Senator Meyer, we are now down to the third reading amendment number three. The reading clerk will please read in that amendment at this time.
House Bill 59, third reading amendment number 3, page 2, line 8.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, I have moved that, haven't I?
No, you have not.
Okay, Mr. Vice President, I would move third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 59 and ask for a favorable consideration. Mr. Vice President, I spoke to the sponsor of the bill, and he said primarily the reason this language was deleted was because a lot of the caregivers now are grandmothers and grandfathers and aunts and uncles, and they're not actually the parent. And that was something that we really didn't contemplate when we wrote the original language. And I have to agree with the sponsor that perhaps at this section of the law was probably punitive in those circumstances where the caregivers were not the parents. This section of the law was included to basically not incentivize the recipient to stay at home and continue to have children and continue to get paid for them. So with a little fine tuning with the LSO, we reinsert the stricken language, and we insert the language a child born to, and we delete part of the language there. So we basically have what the sponsor wanted originally, and that's to make sure that the grandfathers and grandparents and aunts and uncles and everybody else who's a caregiver, that this particular language does not interfere with them getting expanded benefits under the TANF proposals. So with that explanation, Mr. Vice President, I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and we do consider this a friendly amendment. It does take care of both concerns, so we support it.
Further discussion? Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a question for the sponsor. The question is why in this whole scenario that I've listened to over the years, more than I like to count, why are we so concerned? And I know that you're after parents, but let me tell you, what happens is not the parents do not pay, it's the children that pay when you go in and do and adjust this thing to say, I'm going to not incentivize a woman to have a child. Then you don't incentivize that, but then that happens. And so who pays? It's the children. It's the child who pays because of that. And I've said this before. If we can't stand for anything, we've got to stand for what for children, no matter where they're born. And I would urge us just to leave it alone. And we do have a large number of ladies out there who are having babies and will be single parents. But when you come down on the side of it is look at the person who is subjected and has no choice in those families, and that's the child. So I guess maybe they don't think it makes any difference, but I think we fooled around with this enough. So I would urge us to defeat the amendment. Thank you.
Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I wouldn't consider this too friendly amendment to the children that this may affect. A good lady from Laramie County said it well. But also understand that this is a work program. You have to be employed to be eligible for this. Should a woman have another baby in this process and she's still willing to go to work, she may get the 6 weeks off or whatever is allowed by law. But are you going to take her away from being able to take care of some child care and transportation issues so she doesn't go back to work? She's forced not to go back to work. She can't afford to go to work. This keeps them working. That is the mission of this particular program. And by putting this amendment in here, you're restricting that and possibly stopping her from working. I ask for your defeat of this amendment.
Any further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Vice President, it's worked for 10 or 12 years. I don't believe I have ever been contacted by the Department of Family Service or Health or Workforce Services or anybody else in regard to this particular section of the law. It's worked very well. So I would say pass the amendment and we'll fix the problem that we have with grandparents and other caregivers and go on about having a good law. If you remember, this particular law back in 1995 was voted one of the 10 best laws from the National Council of Legislators. That's what the National Council of the Legislators thought about this particular legislation. It was in the top 10. So with that, I think it stood the test of time also.
Question is third reading amendment number 3, House Bill 59. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has failed. That brings us back to the bill. Is there any further discussion? No. Division being called, all those in favor of the third reading amendment number 3, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. I'm a no. That amendment number 3, has failed. Senator Scott. Would you repeat that request again? Back to the original amendment, or the original amendment number 2 that was earlier withdrawn. Your request is whether or not you can move that amendment.
I'm inquiring, and frankly, I don't know whether it's in order or not. It is a
I would look to Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, amendment number 2 was brought, then withdrawn, and the phraseology, and I believe I quote the Vice President, hearing no objection, so ordered. We also have a rule in the Senate, and I'm reading my Bible, not my rule book. I do not believe we can consider the same item to dispense with it, which it has been dispensed with, and then bring it back up. I can't quote you the rule offhand, but I know it's there. I believe it is not in order, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I would assume that that's acceptable. Then brings us back to the bill, House Bill 59, Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Vice President, it does bring an increase, and I have become convinced that the particular increase that is brought is a good idea, given what's happened in the world and how long it's been since we've updated these. I do have some reservations about that one piece that's going to escalate it annually by the cost of living index. This will be an increase in our spending that won't come through the budget. It will be just an annual escalation. And I do have some reservations about that and about the particular mode of doing it. So it's a balance whether you want the bill or not. It does considerable good. I think it also long-term does some harm with that escalation.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. If we think back to when this was in the top 10 of the legislation in the nation back then, and with what the national trend was at that particular time too, these bills were passed nationwide and on a federal level to try to reestablish some of the basic family, because they saw where that would save money. And as these bills fell into place, they did start to save money, and they started to rebuild the families. I'm not speaking for or against the bill, but I just want us to think about what we're doing, because now what we're doing is we're taking something that's worked well, and we're creeping the growth on it. And as my colleague from Natrona County, outer Natrona County, says, that we don't know really what it's going to cost us in the long run, because it will continue to escalate. Do I think that grandparents need some help? Yes. Is this the vehicle? That's up to us. But we should think about how we're growing this and how we're getting away from what the original intent of this legislation and others like it across the nation really was.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, House Bill 59, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Fecht?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Vasey?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Closing vote?
Burns,
aye. Burns, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 17 ayes, 13 noes.
House Bill 59, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 59 has passed the Senate. Before I go to him, I'll be... Consideration bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at the order of business for considerations on general file.
Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Senator Peterson.
The whole come to order. First House bill for our consideration is House Bill 122. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill number 122, Game Wardens, Enforcement of Littering Provision, sponsored by Representative Samuelson, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
I got to read in.
Oh, sorry.
It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Allman, Byrne, Cole, Massey, and Mockler. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move it when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 122. There are no standing committee amendments, and Mr. Chairman, I'd like to explain this bill to the House, Senate very briefly myself. Mr. Chairman, in 2004, when we revised the police officer statutes, the peace officer statutes, one of the things we left out was the authority of the game and fish wardens to enforce litter. Now, it sounds like a small thing, but the fact is game wardens probably run across this and the most egregious examples of littering that we have in the state, namely littering in the national forest and on state land sites, campgrounds, campsites that are just left. And they have no authority right now to be able to cite those people for doing it. They have to call the sheriff. And quite often, as we know, the sheriff could be sheriff's deputies could be 2 hours away and may be reluctant to drive 2 hours to give a littering ticket. So, Mr. Chairman, what this basically does is gives the authority to the game and fish wardens to issue citations for littering.
Further discussion on the bill? Question being called for? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 122, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? say nay. House Bill 122 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 67. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill number 67, Intertribal Education and Community Center, sponsored by the Tribal Relations Committee, an act relating to education. It was referred to committee number two. Oops, must be another. Was referred to committee number two Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Job, Nicholas, and Townsend. No, Senator Meyer and Peterson. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee whole rise the report to do so with a recommendation do pass that on House Bill 67. And for an explanation of the bill, I turn it over to the gentleman to my right, pitching for TP'd buildings.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, during the interim, I served as chairman of the Select Committee on Tribal Relations, and this proposal that you have before you is a bill that came out of that interim committee work. It started, of course, on the other side, came back. It is to build a building at Central Wyoming College that is, I think this is, a bill actually has a misnomer for a name because it's called the Intertribal Center, and it is true that a major effort in this bill is to reach out to our Native American population and to have a center of culture, but it's also a classroom facility, Mr. Chairman, and the key part about this is how over several years the people in Fremont County have managed to raise the funds for this facility. For example, they have had some help, previous help from the Wyoming State Legislature. They have raised $600,000 in private donations. They have raised money from the Shoshone Business Council. They've received a commitment from the Arapaho Business Council. And our good Senator Enzi has been very helpful. He's actually provided two federal appropriations, which we have received, to add to the funding for the model. Most recently, we've been very encouraged because the University of Wyoming has joined the effort, and it's very, very timely because the University of Wyoming has 247 students in their outreach center in Riverton. But if you have ever been to the outreach center in Riverton, you'll find that it's kind of a dismal facility. The university president actually went to tour the facility and was very afraid that he would encounter a snake. It's on the side of a hillside, and there are snakes in the building. It's just kind of a little shack. Well, they have joined this project so they can have outreach classroom space. And so they have provided over $1 million. I can't remember. I think it's $1.2 million, but I'll have to double-check that, Mr. President. So almost all the money is raised. I'm sorry, it's a $1.1 million from the University of Wyoming. So of the necessary money for the project, almost all of it has been raised, and this will close the gap. So that's a combination of $1.1 previously from the state of Wyoming, $1.4 million in federal funding, $600,000 in private donations, $1.1 from the university, some of which, about half, is private donations and half comes from other funds that they have. And then finally, we're looking to close the gap with the additional state match to provide this very important classroom space, both for university, community college, and kind of a cultural center. Be happy to answer any questions. And I know members of my committee and other folks would like to speak on this bill.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the committee members or other people who are sponsoring this bill. I was a little bit confused as we went back and looked at this for construction of a building on Central Wyoming Community College. The money, if I understand, goes to the Community College Commission, and I'm just wondering, in the second reading amendment to Senate File 1, the budget bill, Amendment 49, there was a list of housing housing and other construction projects among the community colleges that was some almost $80 million, and I'm wondering why it's in this bill and why it wasn't in the budget bill and where that fell in the Community College Commission priority list and things like that.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is absolutely separate from that. It's the list that we voted on in this body for Senate for the budget bill, both for the buildings for the various community colleges and also the second one for the residential facilities, did not include this. This is a project that was started, I'm not sure how many years ago, by the former senator from Fremont County that had worked on this, and it's sort of been an evolutionary process. And if you look at it, and I think the important thing is how it all comes together with the University of Wyoming and the state legislature and the private sector to put the funds together. Really, one of the reasons the additional money is there is because of the additional square footage required by the university. And my colleague from Fremont County very adeptly described the area where they now have that outreach facility. It's pretty dismal. And there's also been an escalation in the construction cost, as we all are very much aware. So really has nothing to do with those two types of authorization. This is something that is separate from that. The Community College Commission has to be involved. They aren't involved. And as I understand it, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, they've endorsed it.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure whether I'm contradicting or not, but here's what I think the facts were. Initially, the Appropriations Committee accepted an amendment in the prior budget year for $1.1 million to fund towards the construction of this facility, and the balance was to be raised by local match or other items. The total dollars just for the facility itself is $5.3 million. So we previously appropriated 1.1. Now the local folks could not get the grants they were looking for, or local participation. At that time, it was not part of the community college request. It came outside of the community college process. This bill adds $1.1 million of direct funding, so that direct appropriation would, if you pass this, is $2.2 million. In addition, you'll recall that we appropriated through the University of Wyoming monies for labs and classroom development, and they were to be matched. When the university put forth that request, the items that they were asking for were dollars that were, or labs and classrooms on the campus in Laramie. The university now had testified that they would like to take $550,000 of those grant dollars that are our state budget, match them up with $550,000 of matches to apply towards this project. So as this works out, the direct appropriation that we're going to be making through the legislature is $2.75 million. That'll be the original 1.1, this bill, which is another 1.1, and $550,000 out of appropriations that we've provided to the University of Wyoming. The university will then, with respect to the other matches, the UW University is going to raise $550,000 to match against its classrooms. The local folks have secured $600,000, and the federal delegation has secured an appropriation of $1.4 million to the project, so that non-general fund contributions are $2.55 million. The general fund is going to be, if you approve this bill, will be contributing $2.75 million for this project.
Senator Vasey.
And Mr. Chairman, the good senator that heads the Appropriation Committee is exactly right on the numbers, but the process a little bit was through the Select Committee on Tribal Relations. And this summer, we kicked this around quite a little bit as whether it was appropriate to ask for this money, discussed it at length, And it was pretty obvious that because this grant money, and this was before the university bought it, before this grant money was there, that this other match, the federal dollars, the local dollars, these other things from the contribution from the tribes, and the escalating construction costs. If we held off on this, who knows what might happen to that grant money? That might be withdrawn, but so this is why we moved ahead. It's probably time that we put this together. People have worked long and hard on it. I know as the senator from Fremont County, the former senator there, had made this a top priority. So I would hope we could support this and get this Culture Center built and the university. Talking about that outreach, I had to go there several times, and I always kind of walked along the wall because it also, besides having snakes, it teeters on a little bluff, and I wasn't sure whether I was going to be in the river or not, but I didn't want to step out in the middle.
Further discussion on the bill? Question being called for? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 67, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
That bill has division being called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. That bill has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 8. The reading clerk will read in the bill.
House Bill Number 8, Election Code Revisions, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to elections. It was referred to Committee Number 7. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, Larson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 8. There is a standing committee amendment for a discussion of the amendment and the bill. I yield to Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if I could have the standing committee amendment read at this time, then I'll move it when we get towards the end of the bill. Thank you.
House Bill Number 8, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Engrossed Copy, page 1, line 4.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow senators, this bill is just a cleanup bill of the election codes and some revisions that we need to do because one of the things, because we have the HAVA or the Help American Vote Act that we've been trying to work towards here over the last couple of years. Also, many of these changes in the revision of the election code, the county clerks have asked to have them brought up to date, and also to make them conform more to the electronic age that we're in now with our voting procedures. Mr. Chairman, on the I'd like to just cover a little part of the amendment here to begin with. The first part of this amendment. Oops, I need to talk about that later. Never mind, Mr. Chairman. I'll go through the bill. Mr. Chairman, on the bill itself, if we go to page 2 of the bill, you'll see that in 22-2108, there are some language changes there, and these language changes were merely to bring it up to date into the electronic age, as I mentioned, because now we transmit things and we have certified lists that are transmitted. So that's what that's all about. 22-3-103 has full legal name, and the word legal was added there. And this was just a clarification so that, you know, people wouldn't use Bubba or Jimmy Joe or some other nickname that they might have. They wanted a clarification so that, you know, that if you want to have an official name, then they want it registered, because there is a requirement in the statute that says that you have to provide a license, driver's license number or a social security number or something of that sort. In 3, on page 3, in 22.3.104, Mr. Chairman, there's a few changes there. And one of the changes is in line 5 where it says area. Well, it's gotten to the point now where actually they do voter registrations in places like parks and schools and not necessarily in public buildings, although a school would be a public building, but they do them much of the time outdoors, so it could be in just about any area. So these are like in other places, okay? 22.5.208, there's a change there at the bottom. Where it says special directors and school district trustees and so on and so forth. And what that's about is these folks have never been charged actually a fee, a filing fee, and we're just kind of bringing the law up to date and deleting those because they're not charged anyway. I think many of you know in your school districts and some of the other places, it's kind of hard enough to get people to run anyway, let alone to charge them to run. Okay. In the next one, 22.6.101 on page 4 now, as you can see, we're bringing it back into the electronic age here where we're using the word transmit and also a certified list. And the clerks, the county clerks really like this piece because, you know, they're pressed as it is to try to get these lists up to date and to get them out, and it really helps them to be able to transmit them electronically. 22.6.120 is the format, is the next piece, and in there you'll see it changed if candidates have filed, and also on line 20 it's again the same thing. And this provision is to kind of shorten up the ballots a little bit. What happens a lot of times, if you get to the point where some parties, you have a number of parties maybe that are listed besides the two major parties, but some of the other parties never ever run in the next race, and you end up just having blank sheets of paper, and it's quite cumbersome and actually considerable waste of not for paper and not be not conservative. So, and also it's to accommodate on the next page, on page 5 where we go to rows instead of columns, it's to accommodate you know, more ways to do the ballots and so forth. Okay, and then on 22.6.125, this is in order to clarify the order of the races on the ballot, and we haven't had this before, so we've added this in now so that the clerks have actually a place that they can go and that specifies what the order of this is supposed to be instead of just being all over the board, to make the ballots more uniform throughout the state. In 22.8.112, which is on page 6 and approved by the county clerk, and this was added because the county clerks wanted it. They're the ones that hire these election judges and so forth, and they really should have the right to approve anybody that's hired. They shouldn't be able to just take somebody off the street and say, by the way, we need you for a judge today. And so they'd like to have some say and approval into that. And now on 22.8.113, going over to page 7 now, where we've stricken the county attorney. Well, the county attorney really has never been very much involved or ever involved in most counties and have plenty of other things to do besides train the judges for the election. So the county clerks actually do this, and that's just bringing it up to date. In the 22.10.108 at the bottom of page 7, and this is again allowing notification electronically, bringing it into electronically age. That carries over to page 8 also. Now moving on to page 9, this deals with some archaic language that was in here about curtains and so forth on voting booths, which we don't use that system anymore at all. And our voting booths, as you know, are fairly small and don't have curtains. That's just bringing it up to date. 22.12.115 on page 10. This is what we're doing on page 9, 10, 11, and 12. Except when necessitated by operation of the voting equipment at the direction of the county clerk. This is talking about opening the ballot boxes. What happens, senators, is a lot of times the judges the ballots get jammed up in the ballot box, they get folded or wrinkled, whatever, and they have to open up the ballot box to kind of straighten things out so they can get more ballots in it. So they want to have at least two people there, and of different parties, preferably, and if possible. And we've added that in, and I'll talk about that in the amendment. And that's what that's all about. It's just to kind of have assure a little more integrity at the voting place for the voters, and to get away from any possibility of fraud or anything else. And down at the bottom of page 10 on 2213106, just talks about the ballots being marked and folded. This is redundant language, and also striking the old language out because, let's see here, it says after marked language ballots will be folded. Well, we don't fold the ballots anymore unless you're sending in an absentee ballot. Wow. Number on page 11, 2216103, it says recorded, taken, or taken. Well, the minutes, just a clarification this is, because county canvassing board minutes are generally written, and they can be recorded in a number of different ways, so they just use the word taking to kind of make it more flexible in how you're going to provide the minutes, a copy of the minutes. 2216102 is write-in candidates. This is about a clarification of language. Also, again, this is the process of providing proper notice, and what when you put the word accepted in there on line 18 instead of provided, what that means, that actually means that somebody, there had to be some sort of acceptance by somebody, but really the statute, there is a, a clarification of the language, and then there's a process for providing the proper notice, and whether you accept it or not, they're going to still provide it to you. Second, the left, page 2021 has to do with computing the date, and this is actually in the statutes in 22.2.110. It just talks about how you're going to count those 5 days up. And last but not least, on page 12, section 2 are the repealers. There's a whole list of repealers here and what they are. They deal with punch cards, county subdivisions, which there is no such thing. There is like things like districts and fire districts and so forth, but they are not subdivisions of the county. It talks about one of the other ones is voter slips, which they don't use anymore. They used to use those with the old punch cards, thank goodness, no more hanging chads. And that's what the last two repealers are there. The reason that they have the date in Section 3 the way they do is because to make it immediately effective, because they have to have these books out, the new books out for the clerks by May, and it just takes time to get them ready, and they want to have this thing in effect and changes made as soon as possible. Now, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the amendment. Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 8. And Mr. Chairman, all this does, the first part of this amendment is merely an LSO technical amendment more than anything. There were some things that were left out of the original title area, and the LSO has added those back in for us. And then another part is where it says up there, partisan and non-partisan were stricken out. None of those positions or offices are partisan offices. They're all non-partisan, so they have stricken that. The committee felt that over on page 10, line 12, Mr. Chairman, that we ought to put something a little different in there, that there, if at all possible, those people that are there when the ballot boxes are opening should be at least from different parties at all possible. Sometimes they aren't, but at least we put if possible, because sometimes there's just nobody from another party there. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, now that I'm out of breath, I'll stand for questions.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on House Bill 8. Further discussion on the amendment. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on House Bill 8, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. That Standing Committee Amendment has passed. Back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill number 8, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. House Bill 8 has passed the committee of the whole. We are now on House Bill number 6. The reading clerk will read in the House Bill.
House Bill number 6, State Veterans Museum, sponsored by the Travel Committee, and Act relating to the State Veterans Museum. It was referred to Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. That reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Ullman, Burns, Cole, Massey, and Mockler, Senator Burns, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. That reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 6, State Veterans Museum. Mr. Chairman, there are two standing committee amendments on this bill that will be moved at a later time. For further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the tall senator from Albany County.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish I could just stand up here for like a minute and talk about this bill and we could pass it and move on. But it's going to take a little bit of an explanation. This is a bill that's familiar to most of the people in here because we had a long discussion about it about a year ago. It's somewhat controversial, so I'm going to provide a little bit of a background as to how we got here today to help understand what the committee is recommending in that first standing committee amendment. The property that we're talking about is next to the Natrona County Airport, and it was constructed during World War II as one of the very few non-commissioned officers' headquarters anywhere in the country. And so that in itself made it unique, and because it's lasted this long, it's also made it historic. In the process of occupying that building, the folks painted some wonderful murals in there too, world-class murals. They're really quite beautiful, and that just simply adds to its historic value. Over the years, there's been various attempts to preserve that building, and it was eventually made into a Veterans Memorial Museum about 10 years ago. Now, the state really was not involved with the building until 2002, about 6 years ago, when as a result of some action by the legislature, our State Parks and Cultural Resources Department entered into a lease with the Natrona County International Airport for the present museum building and began to offer some technical assistance to the folks who were up there. This involvement stepped up significantly, and this was really kind of a key turning point in this issue we're talking about. In 2005, when the state legislature appropriated money for a full-time staff person as well as support of the operations of a Wyoming Veterans Memorial Museum on this particular site. Unfortunately, what we were doing at the time, and we didn't know it, was mixing water with oil. And the fact is that the folks who have been running this museum for an awful long time up there had one way of going about doing it. The state, as a result of its requirements for a certain type of professional approach, especially in the curation of the artifacts and the protection and how the museum is presented to the public, had a different set of approaches. And the two really didn't work very well. To make a long story short, the department eventually hired somebody who went up and worked in an atmosphere that was not very favorable and eventually quit and left. And the bottom line or the gist of the matter in trying to put this diplomatically, Mr. Chairman, is that the folks locally wanted the museum run in a certain way and the state museum folks could not run it that way. And so it really came down to a position of saying, can we even keep this building open? And if we continue to retain it as a state of Wyoming, we face two not very favorable realities. One is that we may the State Museums may lose its national accreditation because it could not ensure the professional curation and interpretation of that site up there in Casper. And two, with regard to liability concerning insurance and possible injury up there, they really couldn't guarantee that it would be operated a certain way when the doors were opened. As a result of that, a bill was introduced by the interim TRW committee last session that would have transferred this back to Natrona County with a certain amount of one-time appropriation. That's what this floor passed. The bill went down to the other side, the east wing of the Capitol here, and they decided that the best thing to do was to give it to the military department in state government. The conference committee could not come to an agreement, and it was handed off to TRW again as an interim committee topic. To make a long story short, Mr. Chairman, during the interim, it was really impossible for the interim committee to get its arms around this issue. Because just as we were thinking that we were starting to understand a little bit more of what was going on out there, we were getting reports from various veterans groups and agencies that were exploring another museum here in Cheyenne for a National Guards Museum, and also getting some feasibility money from state government to do a whole new veterans museum somewhere in the state, in addition to this third one. So we were having military museums just popping up all over the place. So as a result, the bill that eventually passed the interim committee and was introduced was not one that received a great deal of unanimity. And that's the bill that folks see in front of them, the white copy. Going through the bill, Mr. Chairman, 197107 essentially accepts the lands permanently as part of the Wyoming Veterans Memorial Museum lands permanently on behalf of the state of Wyoming in Section 1. Section 2 takes the present statutes that we passed earlier to allow the state to get involved and repeals them in Section 2, as I mentioned. And then Section 3 just simply facilitates the permanent transfer of this museum over to the state military department. I don't believe that there was support in the Senate TRW committee for this approach. But we couldn't kill the bill. If we killed the bill, we're back to the status quo. State Museum or the State Parks and Cultural Resources Department must then continue their administration of this site, and their National Museum accreditation is coming up in the next year, and this could very well affect their ability to retain that. So that's problematic. We have to find a way of getting this museum out of the State Parks and Cultural Resources Department over to the military. So what we did, and what's in the first standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman, which I'll move here in a second, is to take 197107 and to delete it. That's what we're proposing in the amendment. Going down to Section 2, we're modifying the repealers. And specifically, we are keeping in law 36.8.1301A and B. 36.8.1301A is the description that you see in Section 1. Okay? It just simply says we're going to continue to lease this from Natrona County. This land description, we're going to continue to call it a Wyoming Veterans Memorial Museum. And we're just simply repealing Section C, which means that we can transfer it over to the military department. And that's what we're continuing to permit to happen in Section 3. So we're not making this permanent. That's why we're taking Section 1 out. We're saying that this is still a temporary situation, and that the museum in this 99-year lease that we have with Natrona County is going to get transferred over to the military department. But for right now, it's not going to be permanent. We're sending it over to them and through this bill. And the other part of the amendment, Mr. Chairman, is down at the bottom of page 3. After the word department, we're putting a period, and we're deleting the language, except that the military department shall enter into a new lease agreement with the Natrona County Board of County Commissioners. We're saying we don't want that to happen. We just want to continue with the status quo, and in order to get it out of the State Parks and Cultural Resources Department, and we're going to continue to have to look at this and determine exactly how is this going to fit in with all these other plans that are going to go on. And that was the reason for the latter part of the amendment, Mr. Chairman, The page 4 after line 9, insert and renumber, the TRW committee put in a study in which the military department will conduct, and it's $100,000 attached with that study, and it's directed at exactly what it is that we want to see as a result of that study, including what, how is this going to fit in with anything else they're going to be doing with regard to museums. So, Mr. Chairman, let's talk about the amendment. It's pretty much most of the bill, and I would ask for that amendment to be read in.
House Bill 6, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 9.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 6. I pretty well have explained the amendment. It takes a permanent acquisition of this land and permanent transfer to the military department, and your Senate committee is recommending that we keep the status quo with regard to the land status of the land, and that we do move the operations over to the military department and continue to study. Be glad to answer any questions with regard to the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, so if I understand the choice we've got, if we want to continue the status quo and expend, I think there's $100,000 in here, which may or may not be modified by a subsequent amendment, on studying it because we can't make up our minds, then we vote for the amendment. If we want to say enough is enough is enough and just go on and get it done, get it transferred, then we vote against the amendment and are back on the bill as it comes to us. Is that a correct understanding of the choice we have?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's close. I wouldn't say that it's because we can't make up our minds. I think it's in recognition that there's these other studies for veterans museums, National Guard museums, other military museums in Wyoming that's going on. And so we aren't sure what we're going to wind up with here. I mean, if the state picks this thing up permanently, there's a great deal of responsibility, financial liability that goes along with that building. It's going to have to be maintained. And those murals are world class, and they're not going to be real cheap to maintain either. So if this body is ready to say, we're going to go down that road, and we definitely want that to happen, then we should vote against this amendment. If we're willing to say, if we want to say, wait a second now, okay, the military department or the State Building Commission just unanimously granted $100,000 in addition to this one last month for the purposes of conducting level one feasibility and level two reconnaissance studies for these other museums, and we want to know what they're doing there first to determine if this is something appropriate for the state to pick up, then we should support the amendment.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to know, with the studies, the transfer, the amendment, whatever, how safe is the name? If we get out there and we see these studies that there want somebody else wants to build the Wyoming Veteran Museum, or is this name going to stay with the museum in Natrona County, or will these studies, can they come up with a suggestion that we take that name and apply it to someplace else?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's hard to predict exactly what the studies are going to recommend. We were trying to get a handle on that during the interim. And every time we explored one option, then suddenly a second option or third option popped up. If the bill is passed, well, President, let me answer this way. Presently, what's in statute is called the Wyoming Veterans Memorial Museum. That's already in statute. And the Standing Committee Amendment is going to recommend keeping that part of the statute. If we were to refuse the Standing Committee Amendment and go exactly with the bill, it's also called Wyoming Veterans Memorial Museum. So that is the name on that building, regardless of what option you choose right now. If the studies come back later and say, no, we want that name for a museum that we're going to stick somewhere else in the state, then I guess they could convince us to come back and call this building something else.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, another option in partial answer to that could be, because that building itself is a historical relic, it could keep another museum could be built somewhere else, and that could still be could be the Casper branch of the State Veterans Museum. The other problem that we're looking at here, and this is in partial answer to the tall senator from Natrona County's question, if you want to kill this amendment, go ahead and name this site and that building as the permanent State Veterans Museum. Now, keep in mind that the building is woefully inadequate. It's not up to any museum standards. It doesn't have the atmospheric, environmental standards. It doesn't have the quality control as far as HVAC. It has too much UV light coming into it. The building itself cannot house the relics to museum standards. If indeed you were going to have a veterans museum that's worthy of the veterans of the state of Wyoming, keep in mind that will be coming forward. Now the question is, should it be in Casper? I don't know. Maybe it should. But that building itself is not adequate for a museum to salute our veterans. Now, if they want to combine it with the National Guard Museum they're planning down here or some other thing, that's fine and dandy. But what this amendment does is it says we're not making this decision yet, and what we want to do is take a look at this and take a look at what the military is doing.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question or two about all of this. I didn't realize that a museum had to be authorized by somebody. I guess I need a little bit more information about who certifies and who tells us that our museum doesn't pass some certain standard. I know of museums all over my district that some of them are in basements. Some of them are in the back of the grocery store, and some of them are in garages next to somebody's house. I just need a little bit more information about what makes a qualified museum. And also, is it my understanding from this amendment that it would take us $100,000? That would help us decide whether we would keep this museum in the building that it's in, or will be moved, be torn down, will it be put a piece of tin over the top of it, or that's what the $100,000 in this amendment's for.
Senator Massey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll answer the first question, and then the chairman of the committee, I think, could probably answer the second one with regard to the intent of the study. Mr. Chairman, there is no museum police, per se. There's neither a national nor a state organization who will go to any museum that's set up and say, you got to do this, this, and this. Instead, it's an accrediting body called the American Association of Museums. And the AAM accreditation is the highest in the country, and every state museum system strives to achieve it, and almost all of them have. It's the highest standards in the museum profession. The chairman of the committee already mentioned some of those standards that you need to shoot for, but it also has to do with professional curation of the artifacts and their interpretation, especially the professional ones. I mean, when you look at the chore that you have when someone gives you a valuable artifact, that chore is pretty much to keep it and preserve it forever. And that involves a great deal of professional standards to be able to take care of that responsibility. The state of Wyoming achieved its AAM accreditation several years ago, and what that does is open up a whole series of federal and private grants for our state museum to be able to go out and access, and they do access it. So there's a great deal of private money that comes into our museum system because they are AAM accredited, as well as just the prestige that it provides to our state museum and our state museum and historic site system by having that. If they were to have one museum in that system that has the problems that this one does, the next time they come up for that review for accreditation, which is coming up within the next year, that will definitely be held against them. And right now, it's just simply unknown whether or not that will sacrifice that accreditation. But this does not mean that they're going to go up to the Anna Miller Museum up in Newcastle or some of the other ones up in northeast part of Wyoming. They have nothing to do with the state system. No one's going to go into those places and say, you got to do this and this and this. That's entirely separate.
Senator Burns.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the $100,000 for the study is not to see what can be done with the current museum at Casper. It's already known that that building is woefully inadequate for to be the state official Veterans Museum. A lot of the small little community museums we see around are basically collections that people have and they put on display, and people will bring by other artifacts, old family heirlooms and so forth, and they're put on display, and it's either privately done or it's a community thing or sometimes a county thing. It's not the official state museum. The problem that you run into when it became the official state museum, it was put under parks, state parks and rec, and it became part of the state museum system. That meant it had to meet the state standards. No other museum does that. The problem is they never have done that. And even if they tried to do it, even if they had professional curators trying to run that building professionally, it can't be done because the improvements that have to be made to that building to meet the standards would ruin the historical integrity of the building. The building itself is a relic. It was the enlisted man's club for the Casper Air Base at that time. That's where we run into the impasse that we have here. The building itself is not adequate to be the museum, but the building itself is a relic, so you cannot improve it to do it. And plus, even if you could do that, you're better off starting from scratch rather than trying to retrofit that building. And also, we were asked about the idea of moving that building. It would probably ruin the murals, and the murals are the big attraction to the building. So that building's not going to be moved no matter what happens, no matter where else they may put a state veterans museum. That will still be an adjunct to the state museum system. There's no question about that. The question arises, and the reason we're having the study is to hire a consultant to go out to see if we want a state veterans museum, I mean a professional one, and to go out to various communities to see what their interest is in hosting that state museum and what will they put forward to be the host of that museum. For instance, the city of Rawlings along I-80 may want to donate land. It's a good attraction. That's the sort of thing that the $100,000 is intended for, Mr. Chairman, is to see what interest is out there by the various communities to see if they want to do it. When the time, if the study comes in and says here are the best candidates, and let's say there's four. For instance, Cody has an excellent memorial, the Korea War Museum, War Memorial up there. That may be a great location. Then it would be up to this body to decide. Yes, we want to go here, and then what structure are we going to do it? Is the state going to put up how much money, and is it going to be some sort of match? And I would assume it would have to be matched 2-to-1 or something by whatever we put up by private parties. And then, again, I'm just projecting in the future. But that's what the idea was behind the $100,000, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, what we have here is a failure to communicate. We've got a lady in the museum, and she's been there. See, there's a poster on the wall, an old military poster, and supposedly that's her. And she sits there and was there from the beginning, evidently. And as you go through the museum, she'll take you by the hand, and she'll tell you where each piece that's there came from, how they came to get the piece. Then you look at the, she takes you over and looks at the register book, and you see that there's soldiers from all over the world that have come through there, and they'll reach in their pocket and say, look what I found when I was in World War II. Can I give it to you? And she takes it and she puts it in a case, and she writes down the notes on how special it is. And there's a lot of things in there that she's getting that just don't apply to anything. When you send somebody up there and say, you're going to take an old barracks building that's been converted into a NCO club, and it has all these wonderful paintings that were, the paint was either stolen or created from the clay and the dirt around there, and you say, we're going to come in there, and we're going to put this guy in there, and he's going to make you a professional museum. And she says, you're going to do what?
well, we can do this and we can do, and she said, no, you're not going to move that and you're not going to move that. And you have a professional that comes in there that knows what a top-of-the-line museum is supposed to look like. And what you have here is you have an old lady who's and a bunch of helpers that have everything gathered up and put in there. And as long as that group of people are still around, they're going to be butting heads. And we can do studies, and we can do this. But right now, we've got this group of people saying, give us to the military. The military said, we'll take them, and we'll be done with it. And someday down the road, when those people all go across the other side, and they're in the Great War on the other side, then we can come back to it and say to the military, do you really want this building anymore? Do you really want these artifacts? And at that point, we can sit down and say, do we build a big building over it and make the building itself, which is the number one artifact, and cover it and protect it and all that? We're spinning our wheels here year after year on this. Until that group of people go on, you're going to have this. Let's defeat the amendment. Let's pass the bill. Give it to the military. They think they can get along with the military. We don't know until they try, because I'll tell you, this lady is hard-headed, and it's her way or the highway. And if you don't believe that, ask that expert that we sent up there, because he's on the highway and she's still there. So let's quit wasting our time, kill the amendment, pass the bill, and go do something more fun.
Still on the amendment, Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, that really is the best explanation I've heard of this process, having lived it. But all, what I want to know is, when do we get, if that's the case, when do we get our general funds back, and when does Natrona County start paying for this?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yeah, let's go ahead and vote on the amendment. But just so that folks know, this is going to the military department regardless. The amendment means it's not permanent. If you defeat the amendment, then we go back to the bill, and that does mean it's permanent. And indeed, the state is putting money into this, probably to the tune of about $300,000 a biennium.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, that is the thing I was going to mention. You may think we're saving $100,000 if you pass the standing committee amendment from the Appropriations Committee, but the fact is, it becomes a line item in the military budget, and Chairman of the JAC is indicating, it's to the tune of $400,000 to a museum that's an inadequate facility that's not being run professionally.
Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that the members of the Senate would not refer in derogatory terms to the age and disparity of the lady who is taking care of all these things.
Thank you, Senator Larson. We're still on the amendment. Further discussion on the amendment? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 6 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
That bill has failed, or that amendment has failed. Division being called for. All those in favor, please stand. Opposed, please stand. Motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 6 has passed. Back on the bill, there is another Standing Committee Amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I move
Senator
Standing
Nicholas.
Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 6.
We need you.
Ladies and gentlemen, what this does is you go, this is a deletion of the amendment of a portion.
Excuse me, Senator Nicholas, you want to read that amendment in?
Oh, I apologize. Excuse me.
House Bill 6, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 5.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 6. What this does is delete the paragraph B that provides for the $100,000 appropriation. Folks, I think what's been described is that this was a facility that was locally funded. The Natrona County delegation got it in the budget so that the state would fund it. We've been funding it for many years. We funded it through the state parks and recreation. It's now developed. It's not a good match. It's being returned to the military folks, and that's all it's about. It's about funding a facility. It was never about developing a statewide museum and putting the veterans and putting that on a level to where it is one of the highest priorities that we need to do in the state. What the standing committee did, or the first standing committee, says, let's go out and hire a consultant, decide where we're going to have a single statewide museum, and that's well beyond the intent of the original bill. And we'd urge that you support the extraction or the deletion of that provision and leave this bill as it was. It was simply a funding mechanism for one of our counties to take care of a facility that they love.
Senator Case. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm against the amendment. Mr. Chairman, everything that Chairman of JSC said is absolutely true. This body really has a choice to make. And if you pass this amendment, delete the money, okay, then we stay with an inadequate building that's being inadequately run, and it just stays in the line item, this time the military department instead of state parks. And frankly, it's out of what's left of my hair. But frankly, it's a clanky organization. It's a clanky way to do things. That the reason we put the $100,000 in is, do we want to do this correctly? If we're going to be spending $400,000 or $500,000 a year to run a state museum, let's see if we can run a proper state museum and run it properly instead of the way that this place is being run in Casper. I meant no insult to the people who currently run it. They just don't run it professionally as a museum. They're not professionals. They're doing it out of their heart. They are doing it out of the goodness of their heart. The lady who was referred to was a WAC on that air base back during World War II, and that place is her heart. And, I mean, no disrespect toward her whatsoever. But the fact is, If we just want to be complacent about this and just keep throwing money at a bad operation in a bad building, then vote for this amendment. Otherwise, if you want to go a different direction and maybe a proactive direction that truly honors our veterans, then defeat this amendment.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, in favor of the amendment. Let's, Wyoming's not going to stop to operate if we don't go out and find the place for the new Veterans Museum. As long as that lady's heart's still beating and as long as that crew she's got there, no matter how adequately they are running it or not, they're running it, they build it. Let's give them to the military, leave them alone, let them see how, nothing's going to fall apart here, just let them do it. And someday down the road, we can be uncomplacent and come back in and look at it. Let's not spend the money. Let's support the amendment and take the money out and let them go.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll offer my second time, and I invite people to follow me. It's not a big deal. I'd like to hear what the issue, but we didn't hear in the committee, and what I'm beginning to hear now is where the committee is going is that we've got about $400,000 per biennium to operate this facility. And now what I'm hearing is that, look, we shouldn't be spending $400,000 for a local facility that doesn't serve a statewide purpose, which would be the state museum. So if your direction is to say, let's temporarily fund this facility, and we'll do it for a few years, let's look to see whether we can have for that same $400,000, we can operate a better facility. Maybe there's somewhere we can move those dollars. then that is a different direction that was brought to the Appropriations Committee. I think that when the Appropriations Committee evaluated, they were simply saying, look, the $400,000 is there. It's already won its position in the budget, and there's no purpose of expanding and going beyond this by trying to expand that facility to a much larger facility, because if the notion is they need another $10 million to convert that facility to a state-of-the-art facility, I'm not sure that that's – I would say if that's the case, then the Appropriations Committee would recommend it against it. If, on the other hand, you're saying, look, there are other facilities where we could move this $400,000 to and do provide a better job, which would then leave Casper to funding its own facility, that's a different issue than was presented to the JAC. So I guess I'd invite response to that.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand and appreciate the comments from my good friend from Auburn County and from Sheridan County. Just a little bit more background on this. First of all, I think it's a misnomer to say that this is a Casper and Natrona County facility. What this was that's where the airbase was. And you were approached by veterans, and the only involvement that I'm aware of that local government had in that was they simply leased the ground for about $1 a year. I can't think of any other contributions that have been made by any local government arm there. And if you go and listen to the committee meetings and talk about these things, the veterans that show up aren't veterans just from Casper or Natrona County. They're veterans that come from all over the state. The artifacts that are in there aren't just artifacts from people who served or live in Natrona County. They're artifacts from people from all over the state, indeed from all over the country, who served in that air base during World War II. And so to say that this is some grab bag, or that this is an institution that somehow that the Casper and Natrona County has finagled into the budget to offload that, I think is a misnomer. It really is an entity, a facility that's been created by veterans in the state to house their own artifacts. And it's not the brainchild of any part of Casper or Natrona County. And so, it's easy to look because that's where it's located and point the finger over there. But ultimately it is. And you'll find when you mess with this and these guys start showing up in their great hats and they're with all their medals and things, you'll find that it isn't just a Natrona County or Casper issue.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, for my second time, and not on or against the amendment, actually, what I want to do is express my apologies to the Senate Appropriations Committee, because quite often, more often with me than I see with other people, you're saying one thing and they're hearing something else. And I don't want either the JAC, Senate JAC, or anybody in this body to think that I was telling them one thing and I'm saying something else now. What I apparently poorly conveyed to them at the meeting is exactly what I'm trying to convey to this body here. And I apologize if I did a bad job of it.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Point of order, this is general file and isn't general file unlimited debate, and there is no second time, am I right?
Thank you, Senator Johnson. We're still on the amendment number 2 to House Bill 6. Any further discussion? Call for...
Speaker 3rd.
Senator Nicholas.
Fock talk a third time anyway.
Question being called for on second standing committee amendment number 2 to House Bill 6. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment, please say aye. Opposed, say nay.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. Opposed, please stand. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 6 has failed. We are back on the bill. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've had a thorough explanation of the concepts behind the bill and call for the question.
Question being called for on House Bill 6. Where am I at here? Those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 6, say aye. Opposed, say no. House Bill 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 91. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 91, Streamline Sales and Use Tax, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to sales and use taxes. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Case, Mockler, and Ross. No, Senators Jennings, Senator Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I hope I would move that it do so with a favorable consideration of House Bill 91. Before I really get into explaining the bill, I think I need to offer a few comments in regard to streamlined sales tax. And first of all, the bill that I'm presenting here, the discussion, really isn't about whether you're for or against streamlined sales tax. That's a vote. That's a debate for another day. As a matter of information, Wyoming and a number of other states have entered into an agreement. It's kind of a work in progress in regard to the streamlined sales tax and use tax agreement. That's a work in progress. It's a voluntary thing now for most states as well as Wyoming. In order for this ever to really become completely engaged, it will take federal action, and I know that Senator Enzi has worked considerably on this, and they've made a number of attempts and haven't got there yet. So what I'm talking about here today in this House Bill 91 has to do with the changes that are merely clarification of the existing language that conform with the streamlined sales tax agreement, and these are then just amendments that go into a current tax statute in regard to bring about that conformity. And so with that in mind, some people may have some heartburn in regard to streamlined sales tax, may want to push back. This is not the time. This is really just, I say, conforming amendments. As we look at the bill, really, I think that you can see in the first section, page 1, in regard to definitions, and it talks about a clear definition in regard to what constitutes sale price. I will not take the time in order to go through that. There's a section, line 9 through 12, an amount of the consideration in regard to be attributable to sales tax is fixed. That, then, we've been told is really being done as a matter of policy now. This codifies it, puts it in statute. It goes on through with kind of existing language in the Title 39 tax code until we come over to page 3, and then you see new language again, further definitions in regard to direct mail. And since there will be direct mailing occurring quite often, the sales tax agreement, then there's an explanation of what constitutes direct mail. I would not have to go through that at this time. I would leave that for your perusal. Going over on page 4, section 3915.104, this has to do with the tax rate. Much of this, again, is current statute in regard to tax rate. And, again, this section, in this section, lines 11 and 12, this just makes reference to the paragraphs in current law and, again, bringing conformity with the sales tax agreement to current law. And then over on further on page 5, it talks about aircraft, and we get to taxing aircraft. If we have foreign authorities, that did not occur in the current language. So then if we have English airlines coming from England or other places, that would be the ability to recognize those in tax code. Section 3915.106 in regard to license permits, that section is regard to the language in order to license, and I would just call your attention to line 12, and it talks about those out-of-state vendors may voluntarily, again, statutory indication that this program at this time is still voluntary program. So moving further, there aren't really any changes in the statute on page 6. Page 6 is entry into section 3916104 in regard to the tax rate. The tax rate is charged in Wyoming, and again, there's some conformity being brought into lines 3 and 4 and as to how that should apply. Again, another reference in regard to the tax rate that would be brought against aircraft on line 18 and going down section 21 that again recognizes the taxing of a foreign authority. Finally, coming to the final page, page 8, just a reference on line 11, again, further conformity in regard to the streamlined sales and tax use agreement. And I would say again that this is a work in progress that we're working on. I would openly admit that the co-chair on the House side has been more involved in this, given kind of my late entry into the revenue picture. And he's been involved with several meetings in regard to the construction of this agreement. And again, this is being brought home to bring conformity. And finally, line 16, again, suggesting that out-of-state entities, again, may voluntarily register in this, again, a volunteer effort. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would say in regard to the efforts that we're making now, currently, to date, we have received about, or since its inception, we've gathered about $4 million through this voluntary effort, and as of calendar year 2007, we took in about $1.6 million from this. So as things kind of play out, like I say, it's totally dependent upon federal initiative in order to bring this about. But in the event that this comes before us for our debate, this agreement will then be in place, and then we can act upon it as we so choose. Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I would pause for questions or call for the question on the bill.
Further discussion on the bill? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Anderson's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 91, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. That bill has passed the committee of the whole. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I have privilege of the floor? The
floor is yours, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It must be a Fremont County day. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce a former member of this body, and he just told me he sat right over there. My colleague from Laramie County sits, and his picture's up there on either side of the Mineral Committee room, so every time I walk in there, I know he's watching me, and that's my uncle, Mike Sweeler. Would you please welcome to the Senate, Mike? And Mr. Chairman, if any members of this body see fit to be in Hudson and go by a place called Sweeler's, he's there. I bet he might just be able to help you out with your meal.
Senator Nicholas. Well,
Mr. Chairman, does that go for all of our family, too? I got a big family.
Welcome to the Senate, Uncle. All right. Moving on, the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 54. The reading clerk will read in the House Bill.
House Bill 54, Natural Gas Valuation, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to taxation and revenue. It was referred to Committee Number 3. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Case, Jennings, Mockler, and Ross, Senator Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I would move that it do so with a favorable consideration of House Bill 54, Natural Gas Valuation, and I would yield to the ranking member of the Revenue Committee, and if not ranking, she certainly has pull with me, a good senator on the other side of the room.
Senator Mockler.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The first thing I want you all to know is that if you sneeze on this bill, the Revenue Committee will pretty much have their way with the rest of your bills. This is an issue that has been around probably about as long as I have. It is producer processed natural gas. And it's when it started out, there were quite a few plants that had producer processed natural gas, and it was a difficult situation in determining the point of value, how do you determine the rate of return, et cetera. Most of them had gone to comparable value, and that was a value that we decided upon. We have in our statutes a few different kinds of value that we used to decide what the fair market value is of a product. We have comparable sales, comparable value, net back, which we cannot use for gas, proportionate profits, and now what this bill creates, and it's basically beginning on page, because I wrote it out, page 8 of the bill, and this is probably the most important, is a modified net back. And we went through in the we've really been at it for the last 8 years, and we have had a lot of subcommittees and special committees and task forces trying to really define what a modified net back would be. And we've reached an agreement, and people have sat in a lot of rooms and argued with each other. We had a task force this summer that we started out, we thought we were where we wanted to be, and that collapsed, and then we went back to another one. And what we have before you is the agreement that producer processed natural gas will be valued as a net back, modified net back, assuming there is no proportionate profits method in place. The problem we always have was that under net back, it was always possible that there would be no value for our gas after it was produced, which we had a little bit of a problem with. We thought it had some value. So we went to proportionate profits, which always guaranteed us some value, but it was low. So what we have now is a modified netback. Modified netback with the floor assumes that we'll get at least something. We'll either get the proportionate profits as the lowest price, as the price, or the netback with the price. So, as I said, the rest of the bill is the definitions of the rate of return, how it comes about, what they use in the valuation. But it was quite the process, and I'd love to answer tons of questions because I have a file this thick that really goes through the history of this. And, all I can do is commend the people that worked on it. The Department of Revenue finally reached the same point as the industry. There are only about two or three of these plants that are left after all these years that are still doing this process the way we want to. And that's down from quite a few when we started. The rest are on comparable value, but we are left with just a couple that do it. And we hope that they'll stay in business and continue to do it because it is a valuable way to use our minerals. But it is a complicated and expensive way, and that's why this took so long.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions, and it goes into page 4 and 5, and maybe a little understanding about the language of the models on the current cost of equity. You got these models shall include but are not limited to. You got equity risk premium capital asset pricing model and a discounted cash flow model. I'm wondering and how that comes into account with the final determination of the capitalization rate over on page 5 in lines 12 and 13. It says that's going to be made on or available on March 31st or as soon thereafter as possible. The final determination, is that appealable to any court? And I'm kind of curious about the capitalization rate and how that's determined and how that comes into the language of limited, but I mean including but not limited to.
Senator Mockler.
Mr. Chairman, we didn't change the appeal process. The assumption would be that these plants would basically, the Department of Revenue tells these plants that they'd like them to use comparable value. The plants say they don't have comparable value available because they don't have any like sales. So they work with the department. They use modified netback. It's still an appeal. They then work out using this methodology that this is how modified netback will work. If they have a problem with the valuation itself, when they look at how this entire formula is played out, and they certainly have the right to look at it, and they disagree with it, they do have the right to appeal to the Board of Equalization. So, I mean, and in terms of how they set this process up, that's part of what was so difficult about this, is what's you know, what's involved in the rate of return, what's involved in the capitalization. You know, that's really what this committee and then back to the task force and then back to the subcommittee of the revenue committee worked so hard on, was to determine what exactly it is that you want to include and where do you want to include it for the valuation itself. So this is where they came. They got to this point, and it's all appealable. And hopefully that where we are right now, the two that are using proportionate profits, you know, that there aren't that many, but they'll be able to move out of that and into modified netback, but they don't have to. I mean, that's still an agreement, you know, with that the department has, because they do have a choice. And this is a 3-year program. I mean, you always, you know, they give you the choice. Here it is for the next 3 years, we're using this program. So the department really does work with the companies. But as I said, from 99% of them, they come in and say comparable value. And they agree. And that's why they're all on comparable value with the other formula that determines how that's done. And there's one company that has two plants, basically, that are on proportionate profits. I assume they'll stay there unless the department comes back and says use modified netback. And if they do, they understand how they're going to value modified netback.
Further discussion on the bill? Ready for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Anderson's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable consideration on House Bill 54, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. House Bill 54 has passed the committee of the whole. Next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 88. Reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 88, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. Sponsored by the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resource. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Johnson, Perkins, and Vasey. Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises and report, I move that House Bill 88 do pass. I'm going to give you a few little rundowns here to start with. When we started out this year, we had $65.3 million, and the request we had was the Gillette-Madison well field, $159.4 million, others was $50.5 million, with a total of $209 million in request, with we only had $65 million to spend, so we had to set our priorities. We approved $25.7 million in projects. Non-project requests with $11.5 million we approved, and that takes in our decrees on the North Platte River and the Wind River and the Bighorn lawsuits are still going on. So we wanted to keep some available for 2009. So with that, we left $28.1 million in the account, and then we could have some reversions. We don't know exactly, but that could move it up to about $34.7 million. That's in account one. In account two, we have available appropriations, $15.4 million. We had requests for $16.6 million. We approved $10.8 million, leaving $4.6 million. We can appropriate this coming year, but if we get some reversions back, we could have up to $5.5 million in account two. In account three, we have $117.1 million. We had requests for $16.1 million. We approved $1.1 million, leaving $116 million left in account three. That's for the large dams. With that, we have the Blue Book. And they're scattered around different members of the Senate have these books. So if you like to know the full benefit of it, why, I can show it to you. To start with, in account one, we really looked at a lot of, developing a lot of master plans this year. So in tab A is Cody Master Plan, Park County, 100,000, Water Supply Master Plan. B is Evansville Master Plan, Natrona County, $115 million Water Supply Master Plan. Tab C, Gillette Regional Master Plan, Campbell County, $350,000 Water Supply Master Plan.
D is Cameron-Diamondville Master Plan, Lincoln County, that's $100,000. And E is Lander Master Plan, Fremont County, $100,000. F is Laramie County Aquifer. We need to check to see how much water and how much drawdown is in the aquifer around here in Laramie County. That's $25,000. G is Pine Bluff Master Plan, Laramie County, $80,000. H is Pine Haven Master Plan, Crook County. That's $100,000. Now, if you don't know where Pine Haven is, it's on I-80, about halfway, maybe not quite halfway, to Sundance between Gillette and, or it's about 20 miles on. See, it's this side of Moorcroft. It's between Moorcroft and Gillette, and it's a little place down there right off of a lake down there. Tab I is the Rollin Master Plan, Carbon County, that's $150,000. J is South Circle Master Plan, that's in Washoe County, that's $50,000. K is the Wind Bighorn River Basin. We're upgrading the water ground, see how much water we have there, and we go around every district or every drainage and upgrade those to see where our water and how much is in the aquifer and stuff. L is the Wright Master Plan. That's in South Campbell County. That's $100,000. And then M is the State Water Research, which is $300,000. That account is in the water account, but we contract with the University of Wyoming to do the work on that. So the total expenditures in account one is $2,105,000. And tab two, level two, tab MC, Alpine Master Plan Update, Lincoln County, $85,000, groundwater well, and Fairview Water Supply, Fremont County, $375,000, that's a groundwater well. O is Glendale Water Supply, Platte County, $150,000, groundwater well. P is Jamestown Rio Vista Water Supply in Sweetwater County. That is $75,000. And what that is to connect an RS and ground level regional system there. Q is the Mile High Water Supply in Natrona County, $75,000. That's to connect that onto the Natrona City Regional Water System. R is North Arapahoe Groundwater, Fremont County, $685,000. And we're trying to find a well over that will produce water. S is the Owl Creek Water Supply, Hot Spring County, $75,000. That's a subdivision to be connected to Thermopolis Water Supply. T is South Water Supply, Hot Springs County, $75,000. We're trying to find a place to increase the water supply for that area. U is Wamsutter Groundwater Supply. That's $800,000. We're going to see if we can find a good well out there around Wamsutter, because I think that's the fastest growing town in the state of Wyoming right now, with a total of $2,395,000 in account two. In account two, these are level one projects. Again, this is on the Norwood River watershed in Washoe County. They're trying to find a place that maybe we could build a dam on that drainage there to put some more supply for irrigation on for agriculture over on the Norwood drainage. The other one is W, is the Thunder Basin watershed, and that's in South Campbell County, North Converse County, and that's a $300,000 watershed study. Total on that part is $600,000. On level two, project storage, tab XYZ is Cottonwood Grass Creek, Hot Springs County, $250,000, review of alternative storage, and that's on the Owl Creek drainage. Double A, Little Snake Supplemental Storage, Carbon County, $250,000. Review of an alternative storage site though we might be able to find another lower storage site down below High Savory to pick that water up and store it again for use for irrigation in the Little Snake River. Total of that is spent is $500,000. Level 2 projects, these are irrigation rehab projects, is BB, Cody Canal Rehab, Park County, $200,000. CC, Grable Valley Rehab, GIS Study, Bighorn County, $150,000. DD is Willwood Rehab's GIS, Park County, $150,000, Irrigation Rehab. Total of another $500,000. In Water Account 1, we're looking in EE is Groundwater Study, $500,000. Explorer Grants with 25% match from sponsors. F is Office Water Program, $165,000. UW Administrates of General Water Research. GG is Mitigation North Platte Drainage System. We've got that finished up, and we're going to get a reversion of about $100,000 back into the Water Development One account. So the total on those projects leaves us $665,000. So the total money spent in water planning in account one is $5,165,000. In account two would be $500,000. And in water development three is $1,100,000. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Further discussion on the bill? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable consideration recommendation on House Bill 88, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 88 has passed the committee of the whole. Next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 90. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 90, Carbon Capture and Sequestration, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to carbon sequestration. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCaria, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2 Appropriations. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 90, Carbon Capture and Sequestration. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill is the companion bill to the Pore Space Bill, House Bill 89. This is the regulatory bill. Just a little background, a little history on this. As your super committee met throughout the interim, the regulatory bill started out, it was solely in under the regulation of the Oil and Gas Commission. That has since been modified. Ultimately, we sent them back to the drawing board with the assistance of the governor's office. And ultimately, they came back, the Department of Environmental Quality and the Oil and Gas Commission came back with the bill that you have before you. In essence, what this bill does is it says, all of your enhanced oil recovery operations, they still continue to be regulated by your Oil and Gas Commission. When you get into the issue of carbon sequestration, whenever that may occur, and what we're talking about is storage, in that event, if we're talking solely about storage, then that will be regulated by the Department of Environmental Quality. So, when you go into the bill and you look at 30-5-501, that's in the oil and gas statutes, and basically what we're saying there is, in the oil and gas statutes, that in reference to the next statute,
Nothing in 3511.313 shall be deemed to affect an otherwise lawful right of the surface or mineral owner to drill, bore, or bore through a geological sequestration site if done in accordance with the commission rules, etc. Then when we get into 3511.313, this is in the 300 series of DEQ, which is water quality. And you'll see there that geological sequestration of a carbon dioxide is prohibited unless authorized by a permit. The injection of carbon dioxide in paragraph B for the purposes of a project for enhanced oil recovery or other minerals approved by the Oil and Gas Commission shall not be subject to the provisions of this chapter. Once an oil and gas operator gets to a point where deems the wishes to convert to a geological sequestration potentially, then in that event, regulations transferred over to DEQ. If not, and they wish to just not convert that, then it's capped and plugged and done in accordance with the Oil and Gas Commission rules. We give the director or the administrator of the Water Quality Division, after receiving public comment and et cetera, to devise rules and regs and standards for, and those are set forth in Romanets I. Through all the way over to page 8. Now, one of the things that you'll see on page 8 of the bill is that as soon as practical and prior to September 30th of 2009, the state oil and gas supervisor and state geologist and the director of DEQ, shall convene a working group for the purpose of developing appropriate bonding procedure and other financial assurance methods to assure adequate financial resources are provided to pay for any mitigation or reclamation costs that the state may incur as a result of the default by a permit holder and so forth. This working group will then report to the Minerals Committee and to Joint Judiciary. On or before September 30th, that doesn't make sense. The working group shall recommend to Joint Minerals, Business and Economic Development and Joint Judiciary Committees on or before September 30th the duration of the post-closure care period. What you'll see that is important with regard to this bill is Section 3, which is the appropriation for this working group, which appropriates $250,000, and there is a standing committee amendment to Section 2 from appropriations that I think also clarifies and assists in this appropriation with regards to the what that money is to be expended for. Definitions are in 3511.103. Basically, this bill, after it got through the work of both the Oil and Gas Commission and DEQ, and ultimately back to the committee, has been the least controversial of the two bills. Once we set out the framework for who was going to accept this responsibility, I will tell you that that took some process to get to this, to decide who was going to have the responsibility and the regulatory authority. But I think we've reached a pretty good compromise, so that what we're doing right now both of these entities have agreed and assured the committee that they will continue to work together. Oil and Gas Commission has a whole lot of expertise in terms of the wells that they already regulate and permit, and the same will take place, and we will use their expertise when it comes to later time as they work in conjunction with DEQ if we get to a point where we're doing carbon sequestration and storage. That, in essence, is pretty much the bill, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions, and I, as my understanding of the under the UIC, there are five classes that the EPA has primacy over, and Wyoming has chosen to take four of those. Class four is prohibited, so we don't deal with it. And the one, of course, is class two, which is oil and gas production. That's the Oil and Gas Commission. Classes 1, 3, and 5, which are industrial municipal wells, wells injecting hazardous waste, and injection wells not included anywhere else or under the DEQ. And I understand the committee wanting to put the DEQ in charge. My question is, when you look at the expertise side of it, and if you go to page 8 of the bill where you're talking about this working group, you know, what they're going to get together with the Oil and Gas Commission on is talking about financial bonding and resources. And I don't think anyone would argue that the DEQ has its place in this bill. But my question is, you know, we have a whole lot of expertise in the Oil and Gas Commission about drilling wells and understanding the subsurface strata. And obviously, if we're doing the tertiary recovery of CO2, that's included in it. And if you look at some information that the Oil and Gas Commission had provided, like 4,400 enhanced recovery injection wells, 4,800 injection wells, 223 CO2 injectors, and DEQ has 26 Class 1 wells. I just wonder if we want to utilize some of that expertise in this working group initially on to say, you know, maybe there's a way we can have, instead of creating a whole new group of people working in DEQ that understand the drilling, and because it's pretty technical, is there a way if we go in there and look at having the Oil and Gas Commission and be involved in the technical side of it rather than just training? And I'm sure the DEQ can do it, and if it, over time they will build the staff and grow the department and have the expertise to do what they're trying to do here, but it seems to me we may have that already. Obviously we do when you look at what the Oil and Gas Commission can do. And maybe there's a way to make this work together more than just using the Oil and Gas Commission for financial bonding.
President Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I think my colleague from Fremont County raises a very good point. And if you read the language carefully, we do require both the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission and DEQ to work together. In other words, at least in this instance, we're trying to break down those silos a little bit and use the resources of the state to the best of both agencies' ability. Mr. Chairman, I hope that the Senate will keep in mind two things about the way this is structured. First of all, DEQ under Class 5 wells has already done these. In other words, we have deep injection disposal wells now. They're safe. DEQ knows the technology and the technique to go with those wells. The second reason why we're moved to make sure that we hold DEQ into this process as the primary agency is because the federal EPA, they're writing rules for carbon injection right now for storage purposes. And if we stick with the federal EPA, because of the primacy that we have in DEQ under the UIC program of the federal EPA, the state of Wyoming retains primacy. I believe that is critically important. Probably I don't know whether we call it window dressing or icing on the cake or we call it whatever is appropriate. But when we go talk to other states, if we say, well, gee, the agency in charge is our own Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, they look at you like, well, yeah, that's great. But if you say the agency that has primacy under the federal EPA is the agency that is the primary responsibility for carbon sequestration, we can walk in with credibility. And it is that umbrella under the federal UIC program that gives us the credibility to go to other states and say, yep, we're going to sequester carbon. So that's the reason. But understand, it is a partnership. We want it that way. We want those two agencies working together. And quite frankly, those two agencies have worked together before. This is not, you know, every so often you get very pleasant surprises in this business. And one of the pleasant surprises have been in looking at this and finding out exactly how much cooperation actually does occur between two very disparate agencies based in different parts of the state, but with a common interest of the well-being of the state as a whole. I hope that answers the concerns of why we have the menu we have.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not arguing any of the information that Mr. President just put on the table, but Oil and Gas Commission is self-funded. So every time we go out and drill a well, in that production, you know, that goes over there, and they pay their staff and build their buildings. And they really have put together a world-class database that's open on the Internet. And they've gotten several awards for it. And if you go around and look at the other states, that's there. My wonder is, as we require these two agencies to work together, is the Oil and Gas Industry, I mean, Commission, going to be able to go back over and bill DEQ for their hours? Because now what we're doing is we're mixing these two agencies here. We're telling the self-funded agency over here, who's done a pretty good job the last 100 years or so, well, 50 or 60 years or so, and really has proven to the world that they know what they're doing, they know the bonding, they know the strata and everything else. Another neat thing about what they do in the process of updating all the time is if there's a well out there, and you unless it's they go through the process of classifying it as a secret well for financial reasons and all that kind of stuff, you can go on that website and you can go to that well and you can pull the well logs and you can look at them and you can see, if you know how to read the logs, you can see what's where the formations are. And that's something that we don't have in DEQ. Matter of fact, I get lost on DEQ's website. And when I go in there and try to find permits and stuff like that, and a lot of times I end up calling saying, now where was that? On Oil and Gas Commission, because this is all they do is track wells and formations, they really have built this up. So not to argue about where it should be, but how are we going, money-wise, how are we going to integrate these two, and should the oil and gas industry pay for this new industry that's developing via the mill levy that we go through now, or are we going to, in these rules and regs, set up some way or another to where the state can pay their way back to the industry that supports their own agency?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to answer that, and it's only because I attended the meeting where we talked about that. My understanding and recollection was that both the DEQ and the Oil and Gas Commission thought they could do it, although the DEQ didn't have the expertise that the Oil and Gas Commission had to that extent, and they weren't sure in the long run, but initially neither one of them thought they would have to do anything more. The President is exactly right on the Class 5, which is part of the UIC information. Started in 2005, and the EPA is trying to get together what they call an experimental technology well guidance for pilot geologic sequestration projects. And we do have primacy on that under Class 5 under the UIC. The EPA is involved in it, and the DEQ is there, and so the President is exactly right. The only point I bring up is not to replace the DEQ with the Oil and Gas Commission, just to make sure that we utilize that expertise And that's the big concern I have. I think it's really important that we do, and they're willing to offer it. So I think we ought to take advantage of it.
Senators, there is an amendment on this bill, and I'd entertain a motion to move that amendment before. Amendment number one, House Bill 90. Senator Nicholas.
House Bill Number 90, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 11, line 6.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 90. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, the Appropriations Committee is helpful, has a helpful temperament, and in this instance, the appropriation was for $250,000 for expenses, but the testimony was that they wanted to also employ consultants or experts as part of that resources, so we expanded their expending authority to go beyond just expenses and add in expert consultation. I urge your support of the amendment.
Question on the amendment. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 90. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 90, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 90 has passed. Now we are back on the bill. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some additional background from some of the came in the committee hearings with respect to the deep injection and the UIC wells and the classified wells we've been talking about is it's one of those things that you find out something you really didn't know, and that was to the extent that DEQ is already doing deep injection wells, and they already are doing a tremendous amount of that. In fact, we found out that much to my dismay, and I was scratching my head when I found this one out, that because I didn't know about this, that there's over 10 million barrels a month of toxic or hazardous waste are being deeply injected into deep strata throughout Wyoming. There's wells throughout all the state that are doing that. And so there already is a significant amount of expertise in DEQ, although certainly there'll be more. And obviously they can make improvements. But there's a permitting process. And ultimately, when you look at the amounts and the quantities that we're talking about injection and carbon dioxide, and keep in mind, just for those who weren't on the committee, that carbon dioxide will be ejected under pressure, so when it goes into the ground, it's going to be liquid. It's not going to be gas, and the injections are going to be deep enough so it'll stay in what's called this supercritical stage, which means it's going to stay liquid. And so ultimately, it'll stabilize over long periods of time. But when you send it down there, it's going to create, as it interacts with the minerals and things, it's going to create a carbonic acid, which will leach other minerals and other things like that, whether it be arsenic or lead or whatever other minerals are out there. It's going to be leached because it acts as a great solvent. And so to a large extent, this deep injection will be a hazardous substance in a lot of respects. And when you look at the primacy and the other issues, it's going to be vital with respect to water quality and things, that EPA is going to be involved in that. Even if we try to do something different with it, it would end up over in there anyway, because EPA, the DEQ is going to be EPA surrogate on that, and it's going to need to be there. But tremendous amount of quantities. When you look at that, the amount of reductions of carbon dioxide that's sequestered now under federal legislation, we're looking at having 50% reductions within the next, I think, 10 to 15 years. Huge amounts of carbon dioxide, if this continues forward, are going to be sequestered not only in the state, but throughout the United States. And so, this is what it is. Would urge your support of the bill. It's surprising to find out as we listened. The president was exactly right. There was a lot of pleasant surprises about the collegiality between the EQ and the Oil and Gas Commission. There's a lot of expertise out there, and actually quite a bit of my confidence in these individuals and their agencies to handle this was I was impressed, quite frankly, and pleasantly so. And would urge your support of the bill.
Senator Ross.
Chairman, with regard to the question about who's going to pay Oil and Gas Commission's time, to be frank with you, that really didn't come up. Certainly the Oil and Gas Commission and DEQ, when they brought this bill to us, assured us that they could do it with what they're doing now. They assured us of cooperation between the two of them, that the Oil and Gas Commission would share their knowledge with regards to the various activities that they have been involved in, particularly in the enhanced oil recovery. But to be frank, there was no discussion about who was going to share the cost necessarily. They seemed to indicate that they were able right now to do what they were doing or do in the future with the budgets that they currently have.
Senator Jennings?
Mr. Chairman, okay, but here's the scenario we should look forward to. Oil and Gas Commission's job, one of their big jobs as far as all the producers are concerned, are permitting wells. They've also got some responsibilities for go out and checking safety and while you're drilling and all that kind of stuff. So, and this is all paid by the industry. So if the Oil and Gas Commission makes a commitment as we sit down in a meeting and say, well, we can handle this and we can help out, and that's fine. But what about the operator now that comes in there, and now it's, instead of taking 30 days, it's taking more like the BLM, 90 days to get a drilling permit? And what about when we start to move resources over to cover this, and we have inspectors going out now and watching the wells being drilled on the sequestration rather than on the wells that are paying the bills for the Oil and Gas Commission? You're going to start to build that group of people coming in front of the commission wanting to know why the money that they pay to run the Oil and Gas Commission is being diverted over to another agency. So I understand that it didn't come up, but I would suggest that as this goes through, this probably ought to be one of those areas that we look at and figure out how that industry-supported agency is going to be reimbursed so that they're not taking away from what their primary responsibility is.
Further discussion on the bills. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, with respect to DEQ funding and Oil and Gas Commission funding, both of them have parts of their programs that are self-funded. Oil and Gas Commission collects fees. They are entirely self-funded, and they conduct a variety of things they make assessments and they collect it, and they do a variety of things. DEQ is the same. DEQ, they have the Title V permit program, is entirely self-funded. You'll recall not too long ago with the former senator from Fremont County came before the board because what was happening there was that some of the smokes, the issue was you charge emission rates to major emitters, and that those from those emission collected fees, you run the Title V permit program. And then you start looking back and saying, well, you've got oil and gas operations that are getting permits, you've got major permits. And so there is an allocation that's made among the emitters to try to get them to where they're paying their programs, if we've made some adjustments. The things that you've described are things that the Appropriation Committee looks at. In fact, as I pointed out earlier, we've asked them to engage in a notification system where folks get notified about the allocations so the respective industries can know what rate or what percentages of the program that they're paying for. But these are not unique problems. They're problems that we encounter periodically. The agencies come before us on the appropriation. We look at what programs they're sustaining. We do the same thing for the game and fish. There's nothing new, unique. We are aware of them, and we take a look at that to make sure the allocations are fair.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, just an observation. As this transpired through the summer and fall, and we watched these two agencies and how they came together and what they did and how they worked together and the balance that was achieved, I think we can have a comfort level in that in this bill and in their willingness to work together and plan this out is that the expertise of both agencies are balanced and recognized in this bill. And so I hope we can go forward with this because I think in all the stuff we watched over the summer, things changed and revolved and things, and it's a recognition that's going to take both agencies with everything they have to really move forward with this project.
Further discussion on the bill? Question on the bill? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 90, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. House Bill 90 has passed the committee of the whole. Next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 77. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill number 77, Tuition, Dependents of Disabled Firefighters and EMTs 2, sponsored by Representative White, and Act Relating to Education. It was referred to Committee number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Cole, Jennings, Massey, Von Platen, Senator Co-Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, moving the committee of the whole rise and report that it do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 77 and defer to Senator Allman for an explanation of the House bill.
Senator Allman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is something that's we've seen in the past couple of years. We've already adopted in the Wyoming statutes 2116-1501, and we're all that's being done to this is we're adding on disabled firemen and emergency medical technicians, the dependents on free education after they go into higher education for their dependents if they become disabled during times when they've been working on the job, being in a fire or doing something with the EMTs and they get hurt on that job. And the bill basically just adds on as you go into two. The University of Wyoming has no problems with this. They'll get up to 10 semesters of free tuition. And then we just go through the bill, the statutes that we've already got in, and add dependent or disabled person in the areas that need to be put in. On page 4 at the bottom, on 15, it has a description in which would be put in, and it talks about, on 15, it says, a paid or volunteer fireman who suffered a qualified disability while acting within the scope of his duties in the service of a paid or volunteer fireman fire department or district in the state. And then little i's on 20, it says, a paid or volunteer emergency medical technician who suffered a qualified disability while acting within the scope of his duties in the service of paid or volunteer ambulance service in the state when responding at a request of a public agency to assist in civic or military emergency or natural or human-caused disasters. And that's added on. And the way they determine disability would be what the workman's comp does. So that's taken out, what workman's comp figures, that's what it goes for. Then there's some language change on page 5, and it crosses out peace officer and puts persons, because in the current statute, peace officers already have this disability education, and we're just adding it on so that changes from peace officer to persons. And that's the end of what the bill consists of, and I hope for a favorable consent on this.
Discussion on the bill. Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 77, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. House Bill 77 has passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had unconsideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 122, do pass. House Bill 67, do pass. House Bill 8, do pass, amended. House Bill 6, do pass, amended. House Bill 91, do pass. House Bill 54, do pass. House Bill 88, do pass. House Bill 90, do pass, amended. And House Bill 77, do pass. Senator Peterson, chairman.
The committee, the whole report.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carried. The report has been adopted. Senator Schiffer, are you ready for message number 206?
Mr. Vice President, I am ready on concurrence requests and message 206 for Senate File 9, State Retirement Board Immunity.
The reading clerk will please read that in.
February the 27, 2008, from the House of Representatives, message number 206, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 9, State Retirement Board Immunity. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, I would move the concurrence request in message 206 for Senate File 9, State Retirement Board Immunity, and I would ask the Senate to vote no. Mr. Vice President, what the House did in their own house-like way is they went in and they had a number of amendments from various members of that body, august and knowledgeable people, and they eliminated a great part of it. And when they got all done, the immunity that they ended up with is that which is contained in Wyoming Statute 123-107, subparagraphs A and B. Mr. Vice President, it's very close to the immunity we need, particularly as it applies, or where we need it to apply, is in the fiduciary responsibilities. And I'd like to say it goes exactly where we need it to. I think it goes 98% of where we need it to. In fiduciary responsibility, particularly on that board, we need to visit with those folks and make sure what they think they said is what we thought they said, or something along that line. I think we can resolve this. I think we can make it work, but we need to visit with those folks and make sure that we all are on the same page, which is Wyoming Statute 123-107. So I'm asking you to vote no. We'll appoint a conference committee and see what we can get done.
Further discussion. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 9, and you've been asked to vote no. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Right. Check and make sure Bill knows what we're doing.
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe? Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Fecht?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job? Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Vasey?
No.
Bonflatern?
No.
President Schiffer?
No.
Burns,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 noes.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 9. Standing Committee reports.
February the 27th, 2008. Mr. President, your committee number 2 appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 12, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 27th, 2008. Mr. President, your committee number 2 appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 17, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 27th, 2008. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 48, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Fecht, and Vasey. No, Senator Larson, Senator Cooper, Chairman.
Well, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Before I make the motion, Mr. Vice President, I want to remind everybody of our salad luncheon tomorrow. If you haven't been there before, the new members, you don't want to miss it. It's very good. And also we have they're going to ask that the committees that are meeting at noon, you get to go first in line. So that means if you're fast. Mr. Vice President, I move the Senate adjourn until 10 a.m. on Thursday, February 28th.
You've heard the motion. Are there any announcements? The announcements?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scott.
Vice President, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning in the regular committee room at 7:15, committee members, 7:15 a.m., to consider House Bill 155, Recruitment of Physicians and Dentists. And the meeting will be over well before 8 o'clock, so committee members can go to other meetings.
Senator Keith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet directly after salad at noon to take up House Bill 133, Taxation of Helium, House Bill 92, Engrossed, Property Tax Refund Program, House Bill 151, Engrossed, Tax Relief Program Amendments, House Bill 107, Property Tax Relief 2. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to take up House Bill 61, Election Judges, House Joint Resolution 6, statewide satellite carriage of Wyoming PBS, House Bill 160, Engrossed, Cooperative Electric Utilities Rate Regulation 2, and House Bill 86, Reverse 911 Emergency Systems.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Vice President, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources will meet at S-14 tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to take up House Bill 10, Engrossed, State Parks and Historic Sites Fees, House Bill 141, Engrossed, Forcible Entry and Detainer Amendments, House Bill 53, Garnishees, Administrative Fees, House Bill 108, Engrossed, Railroad Quiet Zones. We will also be discussing interim topics and the governor's appointments.
Senator Roth.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will meet upon adjournment tomorrow, Thursday, February 28th, in room S1 to conduct a hearing of the governor's nomination of Bruce Salzberg for the Office of Attorney General and directly thereafter, Anthony Lewis for Director of Family Services.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment to take up House Bill 106, Sheep Feedlot Exportation Permit, and House Bill 143, Memorial Hospital District User of Levy.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow at 1 p.m. at S-13 room to consider the following bills. House Bill 33, Engross, Veterans Property Tax Exemptions. House Bill 3, Engross, Campaign Finance Reporting and Electronic Filing. House Bill 42, Engross, Constituent Service Allowance. House Bill 75, Engross, Legislative Per Diem. And your conference committee on the budget will be meeting with the our like conference committee in the House upon the latter of our adjournments tonight.
Thank you. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow after being first in the salad line 30 minutes after the noon recess to discuss House Bill 153, Engrossed, Economic Development Account 2.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet at noon right after being in front of Minerals in the Salad Line for House Bill 142, Driver Service Fees 2, House Bill 51, Multiple Special Handicapped License Plates, House Bill 136, Engrossed Dyed Fuel Enforcement, House Bill 135, Engrossed Fuel Disclosure.
Senator Vasey.
That who's first in the salad line might go to a conference committee.
Any further announcements? You've heard the majority floor leader's motion that we adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. We are adjourned.